It's the time of year when we're all thinking about goals and priorities. Now is the time to plan your next trip. Whatever kind of travel fills you up, whether it's lounging on the beach, connecting with family and friends, or going on a foreign adventure, Expedia has the tools you need to plan a great trip. Download the Expedia app or visit Expedia.com to start planning. You do need to be a One Key member to use price tracking. Signing up is easy and free. Expedia, made to travel.
Building a portfolio with Fidelity Basket Portfolios is kind of like making a sandwich. It's as simple as picking your stocks and ETFs, sort of like your meats and other toppings, and managing it as one big, juicy investment. Mmm, now that's pretty good. Learn more at fidelity.com/baskets. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSC SIPC.
I'm Oprah Winfrey. Welcome to Super Soul Conversations, the podcast. I believe that one of the most valuable gifts you can give yourself is time. Taking time to be more fully present. Your journey to become more inspired and connected to the deeper world around us starts right now. Born in 1926, the Vietnamese Buddhist monk Thich Nhat Hanh is one of the most influential spiritual leaders of our time. Thich Nhat Hanh, or Thay as his students call him, Thay means teacher, is author of more than 100 books. A copy of his Living Buddha, Living Christ never leaves my bedside. His spiritual journey began at the early age of 7 when he felt the calling to become a monk. But this monastic has always been active on the world stage. In the early 60s, horrified by the escalating civil war in Vietnam, Thay spearheaded one of the great nonviolent resistance movements of the 20th century. Martin Luther King Jr. took notice and spoke out against the Vietnam War for the first time at Nhat Hanh's urging, and later nominated Thich Nhat Hanh for the Nobel Peace Prize. In 1982, Thay established a monastery and retreat center in France, where thousands of followers still flock every year. He lives there today, devoting his life to mindful meditation, helping people to be passionately present in the here and now. What a treat it was to finally meet Thich Nhat Hanh on one of his trips to New York City.
Well, thank you for the honor of talking to me today. Thank you for that. Already, just being in your presence for a short time, I feel less stressed than I did when I started out the day. Less stressed because you have such a peaceful aura that follows you and that you carry with yourself. Are you always this content and peaceful?
This is my training, this is my practice. And we try to live every moment like that, relax, dwelling peacefully in the present moment, and respond to event with compassion.
So in a moment where you are perhaps going to miss a plane or be late for an appointment or something is causing you to be stressful, you do what?
Go back to my breathing and try to be in that moment deeply, because there is a possibility to handle every kind of event. And the essential is to keep the peace in yourself.
Macy's Mother's Day gift guide has the perfect gift to make mom feel special. Shop by price, like 25 and under to 100 and under. Category, like fragrance, handbags, and more. Or gift lists, like for the mom who has everything. Gifts that are already wrapped and ready to be gifted and for grandma. Get top gifts like Dolce & Gabbana Devotion Eau de Parfum, Coach Floral Printed Leather Cassie Crossbody Bag, and Le Creuset Shallot Dutch Oven. Shop at Macy's.com/giftfinder. The next generation of influential Black voices can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In the Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black stories, Black truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. Stories should never be about us without us. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get podcasts.
So let's start with 1926, born in Vietnam. Any wonderful memory that you can share of your childhood, your favorite childhood memory?
One day I saw the picture of the Buddha on a Buddhist magazine. And he was sitting on the grass.
How old were you?
7, 8. And he was sitting on the grass, very peaceful, smiling, and I was impressed. Around me, people were not like that, so I had the desire to be someone like him. And I nourished that kind of desire until the age of 16, when I had the permission of my parents to go and ordain as a novice monk.
Did your parents encourage you, or were they reluctant for this to happen to you?
In the beginning, they were reluctant because they thought that the life of a monk is hard, difficult.
So this desire to become a monk started when you were 7 years old?
Yeah.
Yes. And what did that feel like? What did those urgings, that sense of this is what I must do or must become, what did that feel like?
I would not be happy if I cannot become a monk. That is the feeling. Mm-hmm. And we call it the beginner's mind.
Beginner's mind.
Yeah, the deep intention, the deepest desire that one person may have. And I can say that since that time until this day, this beginner's mind is still alive in me. It has given me a lot of energy, courage, in order to confront all kinds of difficulties that I encounter.
How would you describe beginner's mind? Is it that desire? Is it your purpose, or is it your calling?
Everyone has a desire, but the desire to transform oneself, to transform one's affliction, suffering, in order to get free and help other people and change the world, that is a good desire.
Yes.
Yes.
It's what a lot of people refer to as passion, when you're passionate about your work.
Yes.
Yes, it's the way I feel about my work on most days.
And you enjoy
it. And I enjoy it, yeah. Yes. And so if people follow their passion, it's like following their beginner's mind. So what is the life of a monk like? In this country, we just think of it, and I think a lot of people just think it's a lot of chanting and praying and being peaceful with yourself.
Living the life of a monk, I got a lot of happiness and peace.
And it's a celibate life, the life of
yes.
a monk. You never, as a boy, dreamed of marrying or having children or had trouble with the idea of giving up marriage or children?
You know, one day I was practicing walking meditation in a park in France. I saw a young lady, young mother with a beautiful baby. Mm-hmm. And in a flash, I thought that if I was not a monk, I would have a wife and a child like that. But that idea only lasted for 1 second. I thought, I knew right away that my mission, my life is a monk and is very strong. And I don't get lost in that kind of deviation.
Of the mind.
Yeah, yeah.
Of the deviation mind. Of the mind.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was just a flashing
yeah.
moment,
yes.
having seen a woman and her.
I recognize it, and
yes.
I overcome it very quickly.
Really?
Yes.
And other than that, never thoughts about it or a question, did I make the right decision, or what could have been?
No. I think because that intention is so strong that it can protect, it can keep
yes.
you alive.
Yes. Let's talk about when you first arrived in America. You were a student at Princeton. And was it challenging for you as a Buddhist monk to form friendships with other students? Did you ever feel isolated or lonely in a world that, you know, wasn't acquainted with Buddhist monks?
Well, Princeton University, it was like a monastery. There were only male students at that time. Mm-hmm. And the campus was very beautiful. And everything was new, the trees, the birds, the food, everything is new. But I practice in order to get acquainted, to be in touch with all these wonderful things. The first time I use a radiator is...
A radiator,
yeah.
Like a heater?
The heater.
Was it Princeton?
Yeah, in Princeton. And the first fall was in Princeton. It's beautiful when the leaves are falling.
Leaves changing?
And in Vietnam, we did not see things like that. Mm.
At the time, were you wearing your monk robes?
Yes. Yeah.
Is there a purpose for the robe other than just to clothe your body?
To remind yourself mm-hmm. that you are a monk.
That you are a monk.
Yeah.
And what does it mean to be a monk?
To be a monk is to have the time, enough time to practice for your transformation and healing. Mm-hmm. And after that, to help with the transformation and healing of other people around you.
Are most monks enlightened or seeking enlightenment?
Enlightenment is always there when you breathe in, and if you are aware that you are alive, and that is already a miracle. And the greatest miracle is to still be alive.
Are you touching that space all the time? Because I get the impression often that everybody's just running in different directions, but not doing exactly what you just said, touching the miracle that you are alive.
With a practice, you can always remain alive in the present moment. Mm-hmm. According to the teaching and the practice, it is possible to live happily right in the here and the now. Mm. And in our tradition, the practice of mindful breathing and the practice of mindful walking always help us to go home to the present moment in order to live deeply every moment of our daily life.
So it's about being aware and grateful for what we have in our lives.
Yes.
And not just the material, but for the fact that that we do have our breath.
If you are fully present in the here and the now, you need only to make a step or to take a breath in order to enter the kingdom of God. Happiness is possible in the here and the now. And once you have touched the kingdom, you don't need anymore to run after objects of your craving, like power, fame, sensual pleasure, and so on.
Okay, so what if in this moment of mindfulness, you are being challenged? Do you go to your breath then, or do you just not resist this challenging situation? The first
mindful
thing you do.
Mindful breathing and recognize the feeling, recognize the situation, and let help us not to give ourselves, to be overwhelmed by the negative feeling like fear or anxiety, and you are still yourself. It's like a mother when the baby is crying.
Yes.
She pick up the baby and she hold the baby tenderly in her arms. Your pain, your anxiety is your baby. You have to take care of it. You have to go back to yourself, recognize the suffering in you, embrace the suffering, and you get a relief. And if you continue with your practice of mindfulness and concentration, you understand the roots, the nature of that ill being, and you know the way to transform it.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank. Something should be boring, like banking. Boring is safe and reliable. You don't want your bank to be entertaining. Entertaining is for podcasts with inspiring celebrity guests, not banks. PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life. PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865. Brilliantly boring since 1865 is the service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Inc. PNC Bank, National Association, member FDIC.
Home isn't just a place, it's a state of mind. Like curling up in a comfy chair while it's cold outside, with a warm drink, or maybe even a wine in hand. As you watch the world go by outside your window.
Mmm, short rib.
Good afternoon, this is your captain speaking.
Which is why at Delta, our people do our best to make you feel at home.
Refill?
Long before you get there. Delta, keep climbing.
You talk about feeding our happiness. How do we feed our happiness?
Happiness is a living thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to feed our happiness in order for our happiness to last. It's like love. If you don't feed your love, it will die. And the practice of mindfulness is to cultivate understanding and compassion.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the foundation of happiness. And understanding is first the understanding of the suffering inside of you.
You use the word suffering a lot. Many people think suffering is, you know, dire, starvation, poverty, not having enough, you know, food or clothing, or when we think of suffering. But there are multitude, there are many ways of suffering. When you speak of suffering, you mean what?
I mean the fear, the anger, the despair, the anxiety in us.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we know how to deal with this suffering, remove the suffering, and then we'll be able to handle problems of war and poverty and conflicts. If we have fear and despair in us, we cannot do anything to help remove the suffering in society.
Do you feel sorry for the world? Having this practice and knowing this peace and being able to walk around in your community, do you feel sorry for the world and where we seem to be headed and all the strife and suffering of the world?
Once you have understanding of your own suffering, compassion arises in yourself, and you know how to transform your own suffering. And with that, you can help other people do the same. Peace begins with yourself. Understanding and compassion begin with yourselves. We have the practice of tea meditation.
Mm-hmm. Tea meditation.
Yeah. So when you pick up your tea, you might like to breathe in order to bring your mind back to your body and become completely, fully present in the here and the now. I don't think of the past anymore. I don't think of the future anymore. I am free from the past, from the future. And there is a real encounter between me and the tea, and peace, happiness, and joy is possible during the time I drink my tea.
Well, I never had that much thought about a cup of tea.
It takes 1 hour to just enjoy a cup of tea.
A cup of tea like this?
Yes.
1 hour.
Brotherhood and sisterhood. Every moment is a moment of happiness.
We've been talking about mindfulness, and you've mentioned mindful walking. How are we mindful in our walking?
When you touch the ground mindfully, and every step can bring you solidity and freedom and joy. When you breathe out, you might like to make another two steps or three, and you say, I'm home, I'm home, I'm home. I have arrived, I'm home, home, home. My home should be in the here and the now, because only in the here and the now that you can touch life with all the wonders. And you are free from your regret concerning the past. You are free from your fear about the future, and you can touch life deeply with every step.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to 1966 when you were invited to speak at Cornell. And shortly after that, you weren't allowed back into your country and were exiled for 39 years. How did you deal with those feelings? First of all, what did you feel at the time?
I have left my community at home. I was like a bee taken out of the beehive. Mm-hmm. And if I don't practice, and then I will dry up.
Did you feel sadness?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Did you allow yourself to feel the sadness?
In the first year of my being exiled, I dreamt almost every night of going home.
Can you explain to us, for people who don't understand, you were not allowed back in the country because you were, in essence, a peaceful warrior. You were practicing peace. They didn't appreciate your Buddhism. What was the reason you weren't allowed back in the country?
During the war, well, the warring parties all declared that they wanted to fight until the end. And those of us who tried to speak out against the war, to speak about reconciliation between brothers and brothers, mm-hmm. they did not want us to raise our voice.
So when you were a man without a country, you made another country, made a home
yes.
in other countries. And the United States was one of them.
Yes.
How did you meet Martin Luther King?
In June the 1st, 65, I wrote him a letter explaining to him why the monks in Vietnam immolated themselves by fire. I said that this is not a suicide, because in a difficult situation like Vietnam, to make your voice heard is difficult. So sometimes we have to burn ourselves alive in order for our voice to be heard around. So that is out of compassion that you do that. That's the act of love and not of despair. And Jesus Christ died in the same spirit, out of love.
Being hung on the cross.
And exactly 1 year after June the 1st, 66, I met him in Chicago. And we had that discussion about peace, freedom, and community. And we agreed with that without a community, we cannot go very far.
How long was the discussion with him?
45 minutes or so. Mm-hmm. And after that, there was a press conference, and he came out very strongly against the war in Vietnam.
Do you think that that was a result of your conversation with him?
I believe so. Mm-hmm. And after that, we continue our work. And the last time I met him was in Geneva during a peace conference called Passem Interis.
There's an interesting story from that I heard, that you were running late. Can you tell me that story?
Martin Luther King invited me up for breakfast to talk over these issues again. And I was caught in a press conference downstairs. I came late. He kept the breakfast warm for me. And during the conversation, I was able to tell him that the people in Vietnam call him a bodhisattva, enlightened being, because of what he was doing for his people, his country, for the world.
And the fact that he was doing it nonviolently.
Yes. That is the work of a bodhisattva, of a Buddha, of an enlightened person. Always with compassion and nonviolence. Uh-huh. And when I heard of his assassination, I could not believe it. I thought that the American people have produced King, but are not capable of preserving him. I was a little bit angry at that time. Uh-huh. I did not eat, I did not sleep. But my determination to continue the work building the beloved community continues always.
Always?
Yes.
Yes. What makes you laugh?
Anything that can help us laugh. If you talk to our young monastics, you find out.
You laugh? Do you laugh a lot?
Yes. We laugh. We smile a lot in our community.
You refer to, I can't remember which book, but you talk about deep listening also.
Deep listening is the kind of listening that can help relieve the suffering of the other person. you can call it compassionate listening. You listen with only one purpose, help him or her to empty his heart. And if you remember that you are helping him or her to suffer less, and then even if he say things full of wrong perceptions, full of bitterness, you are still capable to continue to listen with compassion. Because you know that listening like that, with compassion, you give him or her a chance to suffer less. If you want to help him or her to correct his perception, and then you wait for another time, but for this, the time being, you just listen with compassion and help him or her to suffer less. And 1 hour like that can bring transformation and healing.
So I love this idea of deep listening, because oftentimes when someone comes to you and they want to really vent, they want to purge whatever is going on inside them, people start talking and giving advice. So if you allow the person just to let whatever those feelings are to come out, and then at another time come back to them with your advice or your comments, you would experience a deeper healing. That's what you're saying.
Yes. The fear, the anger, and the despair is born on the ground of wrong perception. And we have wrong perceptions concerning ourselves and the other person. And that is the foundation for conflict and war and violence.
You've said that the only way we can begin to end war is due to communication between people.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And we should be able to say like this, dear friends, dear people, I know that you suffer a lot. I have not understood enough of your difficulties and suffering. It's not our intention to make you suffer more. It is the opposite. So please tell us about your suffering, your difficulties. I'm eager to learn, to understand. You have to start like that, loving speech. And if you are honest, if you are true, they will open their heart and tell us. And then we practice compassionate, deep listening. And during the process of deep listening, we can learn so much about our own perception and their perception. Mm-hmm. And that is the best way, the only way to remove terrorism.
Terrorism or even difficulties between yourself and
yes.
family members or friends.
Yes.
And the principle is the same no matter the conflict.
Yes.
Terrorists, anti-terrorists,
yes.
father and son.
Right.
Yourself and your boss.
Right.
Yourself and your children, your best friend.
Yes.
Is there ever a place for anger?
Anger is the energy which people use in order to act. But when you are angry, you are not lucid. And you might do wrong things. That is why compassion is a better energy. And the energy of compassion is very strong.
You've said in one of your most popular books, Living Buddha, Living Christ, what do you see the similarities between Buddha and Christ?
Jesus Christ is a Buddha of the West. And his teaching is also about understanding and compassion. In the gospel, there is also the teaching of living happily in the present moment.
Yes.
In the gospel, according to Matthew, he said that don't worry about tomorrow. Tomorrow will take care of itself.
Yes.
It's very clear. And give us the bread of today. We care about today. We live today. And if we know how to handle the present moment, we don't have to worry much about the future. If the present moment has peace and joy and happiness, and then the future will have also.
The nature of Buddhism, as I understand, is to believe that we are all pure and radiant at our core. And yet we see around us so much evidence that people are not acting out of a sense of purity and radiance. How do we reconcile that?
Well, happiness and suffering, they support each other. They inter-are.
They inter-are.
Inter-are. To be is to inter-be. It's like the left and the right if the left is not there, the right cannot be there. Mm-hmm. So the same thing is true with suffering and happiness. Mm-hmm. And good and evil, they inter are also. In every one of us, there are good seeds and there are bad seeds.
And that's just the nature of being human.
Yeah. There is the lotus that grow out of the mud. We need the mud in order to make the lotus. You cannot grow lotus on marble. You have to grow it on the mud.
Mud.
So suffering is the kind of mud that we must be able to use in order to grow the flower of understanding and love.
Do you meditate every single day?
Not only every day, but every moment. Mm. While drinking, while talking, while writing, while watering our garden, it's always possible to practice living in the here and the now. That's what we call meditation.
But do you ever sit silently with yourself and
yes,
we sit, recite a mantra or not recite a mantra?
We sit alone, we sit together. Mm-hmm.
The more people you sit with, the better, though, right?
Yeah, the collective energy is very helpful. I like to talk about the mantras that you just mentioned. The first mantra is, darling, I'm here for you. When you love someone, the best thing you can offer him or her is your presence. How can you love if you are not there?
That's a lovely mantra. Darling, I'm here for you.
And you look into his eyes and you say, darling, you know something? I'm here for you. You offer him or her your presence. Mm. And your true presence. You are not preoccupied with the past or the future, your project. You are for your beloved one. The second mantra is, darling, I know you are there. And I am so happy. Because you are truly there, you recognize the presence of your beloved one as something very precious. Mm. And you use your mindfulness to recognize that, embrace your beloved one with mindfulness, and she will bloom like a flower. To be loved means to be recognized as existing. Mm. And these two mantras can bring happiness right away. Even if your beloved one is not there, you can use your telephone and practice the mantra.
Darling, I'm here for you.
Yeah.
And darling, I know you're there.
The third mantra is what you practice when your beloved one suffers. Darling, I know you suffer. That is why I'm here for you. Oh. Before you do something to help her, to help him, your presence already can bring some relief.
And the acknowledgement
of
the suffering or the hurting. Yes.
And the fourth mantra is a little bit more difficult. And that is when you suffer and you believe that your suffering has been caused by your beloved one. So you suffer so deeply. Mm-hmm. And you prefer to go to your room and close the door and suffer alone.
Yes.
You get hurt. And you want to punish him or her for having made you suffer.
Yes.
And the mantra is to overcome that. The mantra is, darling, I suffer. I am trying my best to practice. Please help me. You go to him, you go to her and practice that. And if you can bring yourself to say that mantra, you suffer less right away.
Darling, I suffer. Please help me.
Please help me.
So I'm going to ask just a few questions about monkdom. Do you exercise to stay in shape?
Yes. We have the 10 mindful movements. We do walking meditation every day. We practice mindful eating.
Are you a vegetarian?
Yes, vegetarian. Complete.
Vegetarian?
Yeah.
So you wouldn't eat an egg?
No egg, no milk,
no
cheese anymore.
Right. Anymore.
Because we know that mindful eating can help save our planet.
Do you watch television?
No. But I'm in touch with the world. Mm-hmm. If anything happened, anything really important happened, and
someone will
tell me.
That's the way I feel.
Yeah.
I feel that way too.
Yeah, you don't have to listen to the news 3 times a day.
Can you be a woman and be a monastic? Are women allowed?
Yes, yes. We have monks and nuns living in their own quarters. Mm-hmm. And
so if you're female, you're called a nun?
Yes, and they can practice together two times a week, sitting meditation, walking meditation, so it's very joyful.
My favorite book of yours is No Death, No Fear. What happens when we die, do you believe?
It's like a cloud in the sky. When the cloud is no longer in the sky, it does not mean that the cloud has died. The cloud is continued in other forms like rain, or snow, or ice. So you recognize, you can recognize your cloud in her new forms. If you are very fond of a beautiful cloud, and if your cloud is no longer there, you should not be sad. Your beloved cloud might have become the rain, calling on you, darling, darling, don't you see me in my new form? And then you will not struck with grief and despair. Your beloved one continues always. Meditation helps you to recognize her continued presence in new forms. And our nature is the nature of no birth and no death, the nature of a cloud also. A cloud can never die. A cloud can become snow or hail or rain, but it is impossible for a cloud to pass from being into non-being. And that is true with your beloved one. She has not died. She is continued in many new forms, and you can look deeply and recognize herself in you and around you.
It's been my honor to talk to you today.
Thank you.
My honor. Thank you.
I'm Oprah Winfrey, and you've been listening to Super Soul Conversations, the podcast. You can follow Super Soul on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. If you haven't yet, go to Apple Podcasts and subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Join me next week for another Super Soul Conversation. Thank you for listening.
Home isn't just a place. It's a state of mind, like curling up in a comfy chair as you watch the world go by.
Good afternoon.
Which is why at Delta, our people do our best to make you feel at home long before you get there. Delta, keep climbing.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.